Winner of the Spirit of College Radio Award, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is the Honorable Mr. Paul Hellyer. Mr. Hellyer was the Minister of Defense for Canada in the 1960s. He served in three governments for a total of 23 and a half years in Parliament. Mr. Hellyer was the first person of cabinet rank to make the statement, and I quote here, UFOs are as real as the airplanes overhead. He has written several books, mostly of a political and financial nature, however, some of which refer to the UFO reality, such as Light at the End of the Tunnel, A Survival Plan for the Human Species, and The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. He has been interviewed on numerous radio and television shows. In fact, was on this show back in December of 2017. Mr. Hellyer is a 95 years young man and still sharp and active. So it is my honor to welcome him back to the show. Hello, Mr. Hellyer.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good. Glad to hear it.
And incidentally, we've got one more book to add to that, my latest one.
Okay.
Which is Hope Restored, an autobiography. And all three of the books, the two that you mentioned and Hope Restored, have reference to ufology and the cosmos and how the whole situation works.
How it's all tied in, huh?
It's all tied in. There are references in all three books, and none of them are exclusively on that subject, but they all have references to them.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask, how did you have a following, and especially in finance and politics, how do some of your fans, shall I say, respond when you refer to the UFO phenomenon as a tie-in with politics and finance?
Well, I think most of my fans understand it and appreciate the fact that someone of cabinet rank will tell the truth and will speak what they believe to be the case without fear of being you know, harmed in some way.
Yeah, ridiculed.
And
yeah.
I think they're very sympathetic. And, of course, the people that are not fans, they can think what they like.
There you go. If you're a fan, welcome aboard. If you're not, go away.
Well, or become a fan, one of the other.
Yeah, right. Well, if they perhaps if they read your books, they will start to come your way on the subject.
It, it is true, because I had a call from someone on the west coast of the United States a few days ago, and he said, I just wanted to talk to the man who wrote The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis.
Okay.
He was so impressed with it that he just had to get through to me and chat for a few minutes.
Hmm.
And I appreciated the fact, but he also appreciated the fact that the book is becoming a classic.
Yeah.
And that it has a lot of information in it that people should have, and that it sort of ties all of the major issues together into what I call one great big ball of wax.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the Money Mafia and how it ties into UFOs, the cosmos, etc.
Well, it's a long story, and so we don't want to get off too far, but when I went public on this question, and you quoted what I said 13 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And I've been working at it and researching the various subjects ever since, I found that on the subject of UFOs, there has been a deliberate attempt on the part of governments, especially the United States government, to keep the people from knowing the truth, from knowing what's been going on.
Amen to that.
And so it goes right back to, you know, the early days of the alleged crash. Well, I shouldn't say alleged, because there were two crashes at Roswell, mm-hmm. 1947. And the first report put out by the spokesman for the air command there said it was a saucer. And then two or three hours later, his boss, Brigadier General Roger Ramey, had another press conference and said, no, that was an error, that it wasn't really a saucer. It was a Roman air balloon used for meteorological measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first was the truth. The second was a lie. And I have been saying that the second was the foundation for really 70 years of deliberate lying on this subject to keep the truth from the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that has been the case. And a lot of taxpayers' money, billions in fact, has been spent to keep the truth from the people, and to fuzz it, and to say that anybody that says that UFOs are real is a little bit cuckoo, and so on. And it's interesting, in the last year or so, though, there have been a couple of new movements, a little bit of information put out from the Pentagon, either deliberately or otherwise, about an early case of a pilot chasing a UFO.
Mm-hmm.
Then more recently, the Navy has started putting out a little bit of information. But these are really old stories, because the Navy was the first, I guess, to pick up a crashed vehicle in the Pacific Ocean in the mid 1940s.
Right.
So why the change in attitude? Why are they beginning to put out the information now? And there are various theories. One is that some of us are talking so much that they can't keep it secret much longer. And I don't know that I really accept that 100%, because they've done such a good job of keeping it under wraps that only about half of the people really believe that UFOs are real. And the other half believe the disinformation and misinformation that's been put out by governments, including NASA, which keeps on fooling the people by saying, you know, in what we think in 12 years we'll find a planet with some life on it, or something like that. And then I get calls and emails saying, see, NASA says they're not real.
Yeah.
And NASA's not telling the truth. They're providing people with disinformation in an effort to make it appear that we're still unique and on Earth, and that we're the most advanced and so on, instead of the very opposite, that we are one of the least advanced and one of the most primitive of species. and that we had so much to learn, but have been learning fast in the last 50 years or so, because several of the species have been exchanging information with governments, most specifically the United States government and the Soviet government, later the Russian government. So it's a long history of keeping the things under wraps, and the change could be related to the fact that now they have to jump 50 or 70 years from UFOs not being real through to the point that the United States has been making them domestically for decades.
Has been
they
making.
They now have an Air Force or a Space Force, which they proposed to change into not just a command of the Air Force, but a force of its own, another sixth force, I guess.
Okay.
If you include the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, CIA, and the Space Command. So that's a lot of different forces, but they have to have something to make that huge jump from UFOs are not real to we have UFOs, and they're flying all over the world, and they're flying off the world to the moon and to Mars and so on.
So where are you getting this information and evidence that we have our own, a force that is going out into the cosmos, people, humans?
Well, it's just about everywhere if you really dig for it.
Mm.
And, you know, Ben Rich, who was the head of the Skunk Works at Lockheed.
Right.
Told his graduating class, the reunion, that we now have the capability of taking E.T. home.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't just kidding.
No.
Because the capability actually existed.
That was more or less a deathbed confession, wasn't it?
Well, sort of. And there have been other deathbed confessions, too.
Mm-hmm.
And would be a lot more if Congress would provide an amnesty under the National Security Act, so that the hundreds and hundreds of whistleblowers could then explain to Congress and to the American people what's been going on for the last, 5 or 6 decades,
right,
and why they should be concerned about it, and what relevance it has to their future as Americans and as members of the human species.
Yeah.
So, a lot of information. It's a big jump from saying we don't even recognize that UFOs exist to saying we want to set up a space force, because space force is made up of what look like and in effect are similar to UFOs and have enormous speeds and capabilities. Most of the technology that some of the species from other planets or solar systems have achieved years ago and have more recently, in effect, shared with us. And perhaps we have improved in some of the technology, but I think some of the species, at least, are still quite a bit ahead of us.
Now,
so I think that putting ourselves in the position of maybe bringing on a galactic war would not be a very bright thing for the Earthlings to do.
Not really. A few years ago now, and the guy's name eludes me. It was a British guy, English guy, that allegedly hacked our NASA's computers. You know who I'm talking about? They were going to extradite him over to America. You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And he said that he's found proof on NASA's computers that exactly what you're saying here is that we do have the Space Force out there. It's out and about in outer space, and And it just seems like, that's too Star Trek-y. It just can't be.
But, yeah, it seems incredible because we're so used to the science fiction
right.
version of these things.
Right.
We say, well, surely it can't be real because we saw it in the movie and it was good entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it, but it's still in the future.
Right.
And all of a sudden says, no, it's not in the future. It's in the present.
Right.
And the recent past as well. So getting people used to that idea, and especially the possibility that the United States Space Command has succeeded in shooting down visitors from some other places.
Mm-hmm.
And getting us in a position where we could be rather unpopular with some of the people we're shooting down. I had a picture. I have a friend in Great Britain that takes pictures of the little tiny people that are everywhere but are invisible to the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me one of them watching the United States Navy retrieve a saucer from the ocean. This was a couple of years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago. And so you wonder, whose was it, and why was it shot down? And what happened to the people who were flying in it? And are we making friends in the galaxy, or are we getting people angry at us? And if so, is there any possibility that they will take a shot at us sometime and maybe show that their technology is still superior to ours?
Well, I would venture to say that back when Truman gave the order, shoot him down, we did probably make a few enemies. I think they could understand their, this ignorant race of beings are trying to protect themselves because they think they need to. But as time went on, and we're not shooting them down. I think that we're dealing with them behind the curtain.
Right. Well, in those early days, as you well know,
right.
we couldn't shoot them down because you start using machine guns and so on, firing from ordinary interceptors,
mm-hmm.
and they would just bounce off. They'd be deflected by some kind of an electromagnetic fence around the vehicle.
At the same time, we lost a lot of pilots back then.
Well, sure,
attempting to shoot them down,
and some of them were inadvertent in the sense that if one of our airplanes got too close to one of them,
yeah,
it had an effect on the composition of the metals in the airplane.
Mm.
And in effect, they would just disintegrate.
Right. That and the controls, they would report they get close to them and they lose control of their aircraft because all of their instruments go haywire. And
exactly.
And their compasses go haywire. They don't know which end is up.
Exactly, until they got far enough away that they weren't affected by the
right.
magnetic waves.
Right, but possibly some of them were on a downward spiral, and they couldn't pull themselves up.
That's right.
So,
but in the intervening decades, we have developed weapons, I guess with the help of the visitors, or at least took the weapons that they had on the crashed vehicles and converted them so that we now have weapons that are capable of shooting them down.
Uh-huh.
And that is an entirely different kettle of fish, as the saying goes, because it's more of an even battle between people with equally diabolical weapons.
Right. At the same time, I don't think we would, knowing what we know about them now, knowing what those who have these weapons, who have back-engineered these weapons, so to speak, they know what they know about E.T. now, to where they wouldn't want to shoot them down. You know, am I correct in saying that?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer to the question.
Okay.
Because I think our people may be allied with one or more species.
Right.
That have been listed as the warrior types.
Mm-hmm.
And that the ones that are being shot down are the ones that are benign. And I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect that that could be what's happening. And it bothers me, it worries me. It was actually the reason that I went public 13 years ago was I could foresee that something like this would happen.
Yeah.
And I was worried about it, and I still am.
Then again, if you think back in history and the Vimanas that the India talks about in their books, there was a battle, and the malevolent ones, and the good ones had a battle, and the benevolent ones went out.
Yeah, you're talking about the war in heaven?
Yeah.
Yeah, the benevolent ones won out,
mm-hmm.
and but Mars was made uninhabitable on the surface.
Mm. As a result, or what?
As a result, yeah.
Ah.
And so the Martians had to go underground to live.
Ah, okay.
And the leader of the bad ones, malevolent ones.
Malevolent, yeah.
was brought here to Earth to mislead us in some of the ways we should live.
Ah.
And to set standards that were very, very different from the standards that most of us had been raised in our early spiritual learnings, reading the Bible or the Quran or the Jewish Bible or whatever. And we started doing things that were, I think, and observing habits, developing habits that were totally inconsistent with those that were really intended by the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a battle here which is so far not, as far as I know, intergalactic, but between good and evil on Earth, between forces of light and forces of dark.
And when you look at some of the leaders of some of the countries on this Earth, it's very, very easy to accept that fact, I would say. I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with the Honorable Mr. Paul Hellyer. And so back to this conversation, Mr. Hellyer. What about your most recent book? What's the name of your most recent book?
It's called Hope Restored.
Okay. Here we're talking about Hope Lost, Paradise Lost.
That's because the situation looks so bleak.
Yeah, right.
But I'm saying if I'm at the end of the book,
mm-hmm.
I list things that can be done
mm-hmm.
to restore hope.
And will we do them?
And the question, yes, is will we do them?
Yeah.
And the answer really is not unless millions of Americans are convinced that they have lost control of their country
mm.
and have to retake control of the country before it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll remember it was a doctor, at least Senator Inouye from
Hawaii, right,
who talked about this shadow government, as it were,
mm-hmm.
and that they had their own army, their own navy, their own air force,
right.
their own way of raising money.
Mm-hmm.
And their own standards of what was good for national security and their own way of doing things outside the law and outside the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
This, in fact, was pretty well verified by President Clinton, according to Dr. Stephen Greer, mm-hmm. who is one of the best ufologists, I think, that we have,
okay.
he is quoted as saying that Sarah McClendon, one of the senior reporters at the White House, asked the President, President Clinton, why he didn't release some of this information that we're talking about and let the people in on the secrets. And his answer was, and I quote, I think I can remember it from memory, "Sarah, there is a government within the government, and I don't control it," end of quote.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, we're talking here about an alleged democracy, and yet neither the president nor the Congress is in the loop.
Yeah.
The things in the huge installations in Nevada and Arizona, no president has ever been allowed to tour those areas. I mean, going back to Eisenhower, he was wondering what they were doing out there after they took the saucer from Roswell to Nevada. And he wanted to know what was going on, and they wouldn't tell him. They, being the shadow government in its early days, the military-industrial complex and its allies, the people who ultimately became what I and others have been calling the cabal, and they wouldn't tell him. So he threatened to send in the army from Colorado. And then they allowed him to send in four people, I wouldn't say four spies, but four people that he chose, and they were, I think, all ex-CIA people that he knew personally. And they went in and found out, of course, what was the president expected, that they were back engineering the had a gravity vehicle that had crashed at Roswell. But the president himself wasn't allowed out there, and no president since has been. And so none of them have been really in the loop as to what is going on in areas like 51 and S4 and Area 28 and so on.
So basically our elected officials are nothing more than a front for the government.
I'm afraid that's the conclusion you have to come to, that you have elections. But it doesn't really matter who you elect, that the decisions are made higher up, as it were.
Yeah.
And so I'm recommending that the Congress immediately set up a bipartisan committee, because all of these issues are partisan. I haven't been a member of any party since, you know, for 20 years. All of these issues are nonpartisan. They're people issues. They're issues that affect us all as individuals.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what our political stripe is. So they set up a committee and then provide either cancel the National Security Act or provide amnesty to the people who want to talk. There are literally hundreds, and I know this from personal contact, in the sense that I get a lot of information from people who would love to go and give testimony, but couldn't afford to now because they would lose their pension or their or whatever. They might even wind up losing their life.
Yeah.
So they are more likely to say to keep mum, just for very, very good real reasons affecting them as individuals or their families. But they're ready to talk if they were given an amnesty. And they could soon put the Congress in the picture. It would take a while because there's so much that has happened in the last 70 years. but at least they could get into it and start figuring out what has happened and what the situation is today. Because there are things that the Congress could do, and some the president could do with the Congress, that would recover the government for the American people.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is most urgent, and I have recommended in it in Hope Restored.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll have to come from the people.
Right.
Because the politicians are very slow-moving, and they need a lot of pushing. So you have to have enough people say to them, in effect, look, these are the things we want you to do, and if you don't do them, we're going to work our backsides off at the next election to try and keep you from getting reelected.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians understand that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's about the only thing they understand.
And I hear you. Last, when you were here last on this show, you spoke of the deathbed confession. You were referring to deathbed confessions of a chief of emergency measures in Ottawa. You recall that?
Oh, yes. That's in one of my books. I didn't remember mentioning it. But
Tell us about him.
He was the head of emergency measures. And an Air Force, former Air Force chap who had worked with me very closely told me about him and sent me an email with the things that he was had reported to him. And then I said, well, I would like to get this personally. And so we started to set up an interview. And then I got a call. The chap's name was Ray Stone. He lives on the west coast of the United States now with his beautiful wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you want to talk to him, you better call him right away because he's almost terminal. So I did, and talked to him and verified what he had written in the email. And it was only a matter of days after that he died.
Hmm. And what exactly did he say?
Well, basically that he had been flown by the CIA to Nevada. And then taken one of these buses that has shaded windows.
All right.
And taken into a hangar and was allowed to go through UFO and inspected and so on. This because in his job, it was useful to know what the dangers are of getting too close to one of these vehicles, whether they're radioactive or whether they aren't and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that he, the CIA, had asked him if he would like to see one. Of course, he said yes, and then he went and saw it. Well, then he was bound by his oath, as everyone is, under those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't say anything even to his wife until he got very close to his deathbed.
Mm.
And then he started talking first to his wife and then put this stuff on paper for Ray Stone. And then from Ray to me and he directly to the chap who had been involved before he died. And thank goodness for that.
So do you write about him in any of your books?
Yeah, the story is in one of them. Can't be sure which one it was, but I think probably... The Money Mafia.
Money Mafia. That sounds like I must confess I have not read that book, but it sounds like I should.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with you, frankly.
Of course you wouldn't. You should read my books, too. You know?
and you know, I think you could even get one free or certainly an electronic one by getting in touch with the publisher.
Oh, okay. Well, I will email you, and we'll see what we can do. How's that?
That's fair enough.
Okay, appreciate it. So, what do you think about this false flag war that Carol Rosen spoke about in the Disclosure Project? You know what I'm talking about?
No, I think I've got so many emails from Carol recently that I haven't had a chance to catch up on reading them yet.
Well, she said that Wernher von Braun told her that you know, what they plan on doing with the they need weapons in space for a different reason. First, it was the Russians. The Russians are going to attack us, so we need these space-based weapons. And then, what did they call them? Countries of concern.
I think the second thing on her list, as I recall it, and I know her very well, and I remember her telling me about it, was the terrorists.
The terrorists, yeah.
Countries of concern. Well, second on the list. Of course, you had to have that phony 9/11 in order to get that going.
And then we're going to have a false flag war with E.T. was going to allegedly attack us, but it would all be staged.
Yeah, the idea is that you could convince the people, and this is something that we have to be very careful about, convince the people when they see these things coming over that they're from space, mm-hmm. and that we should allow military government and bow the knee to Caesar and let them set up their fascistic world government of, by, and for the elite, 0.1% of the elite, and that's that, and then take whatever the consequences were.
Okay, I'm talking about E.T. now, not... the elite.
Yeah, but the E.T., the elite control the E.T.
Okay.
They're, the elite are at the top of the cabal's list of commanders.
Okay.
I can go through the list of the cabal if you want, but it's...
Well, who's at the top? The elite?
At the very top... at the very top are the Illuminati, and then the banking cartel, mm-hmm. which is really the the richest people in the world, mm-hmm. are in the banking cartel, and the most powerful because they create nearly all the money that is created in the whole world, mm-hmm. and they created all as debt. And debt that has to be repaid, both principal and interest, even though we poor saps don't have any money with which to repay it, because no one creates any.
Right.
And so they're right at the top of the heap. And then the oil cartel, which has been giving us false information for decades and buying up all the patents to Zero Point Energy. Mm-hmm. It was, about 20 years ago when Dr. Wolf, who had a very, very high security clearance and worked in, I think it was S4 in Nevada, said that some years before that, the United States government had developed both cold fusion and zero-point energy. So they have had the technology for at least 30 or 40 years and could have saved the world from the kind of hurricanes and typhoons and huge rainstorms that we're getting now. Mm-hmm. Speaking of rainstorms, I have a place on the lake north of Toronto, and one of my grandsons was up there the other day and took some pictures and sent it down. Mm-hmm. And the level of the lake is 4 or 5 feet higher than it's ever been before.
Goodness gracious!
And this and thousands of people in three provinces in Canada have been dislocated and had to vacate their places, and a lot of them are going to have to be torn down, and so on. So this kind of change in weather is the kind of thing that's happening that. And it's going to get worse instead of better.
And still people deny it.
And still people deny it.
as the water creeps up to their knees.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. And I was frankly shocked when I saw these pictures, because I've been going to that spot on Lake Muskoka for 71 years. And the water has never been within 4 or 5 feet of this year's level. Never. And so this is new, and we have to get used to it because there's going to be more of it.
Yeah, I'm afraid that we have to get used to it because I think we've gone past that point of no return.
Well, past the point of no return, but every extra half percent of heat for the world makes it worse.
Yeah.
And we can still do something. And I have, in two or three of my books, said that we had to take this zero-point energy and start building zero-point energy engines immediately and installing them in every car and truck and tractor and boat and airplane and house in the world as fast as we could do it.
Yeah.
And I think we could do it in 5 years if we really had the political desire to do it.
Yeah.
And I often say, and I hope I didn't say this the last time I was on your program, that I went through something comparable in World War II. I was in two of the forces. But in that war, we converted all of the automobile factories and all of the refrigerator factories and all of the washing machine factories into armaments factories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it worked.
Sure.
And now we have to do the exact opposite. And take the armaments factories and convert them into zero energy engine factories and start installing them. And not only would it provide probably billions of jobs around the world, but hundreds of millions of jobs, it would stop the thing before it gets so absolutely terrible that life on Earth would be, well, hell on Earth, really.
Yeah. I need to take one more minute to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Station Making Waves. I'm David Twitchell, and this is We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. Paul Hellyer. And we're talking about zero-point energy now. Tell me and our listeners what zero-point energy is.
Well, it's difficult to describe, but it's the energy that's in the whole cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free.
And it's free.
When you go to school and you start talking about something that keeps going indefinitely without an input of power, people laugh at you because you don't know how to do it.
Right.
But if you develop the machinery for zero point energy, it it just goes and goes and goes, and it has tremendous advantages. Not for the elite, but for ordinary people. Because every time we have an ice storm up here, and I presume it's the same in some parts of the U.S., the trees start falling on hydro wires, and then you're without power. And so hundreds or thousands of people are without power for 3 or 4 or 5 days, and sometimes even longer. And it can get pretty cold sometimes, notwithstanding global warming. So if you had this one of these machines in your basement, you would never have to worry about that.
Well, if you had one of these machines in your basement, you wouldn't have to worry about it because you would never use the regular energy that we're using now. We'd just use that machine, eh?
Absolutely. That's the whole idea.
That's the whole idea, right.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to say, well, let's turn on the generator because we just lost the power.
No, you wouldn't have to turn on the generator, and you wouldn't have to say, well, I lined up for more gasoline or whatever, and there was none because there's too many people in the line.
But, now, nobody has to explain finance to you or money management to you. If we had zero-point energy, what would they sell us? What would they? They wouldn't be able to sell us anything.
Well, they would sell us the machines, just as they do now, like people buying new furnaces or new cars or having car engines.
Right, but isn't it the case that that machine will just? It's a perpetual motion machine that will, you buy the machine and that's it. You won't Why don't you?
Of course, but then ultimately you'd have all of that money to do the other things that have to be done to clean up the world and build the cities that are decent and take down slums and build parks and replace infrastructure and all of the things that people are worrying about. Right. So, and it's not going to happen overnight, even if I think, you know, we should aim for 5 years. It's not going to happen overnight. But this sort of brings me to my final shot, which I know you maybe, well, I'm going to do it anyway. We're going to have government-created debt-free money. Mm-hmm. Because the people who are running the world, the cabal, we have to break their monopoly on creating money and creating it all as debt. So, and here it's going to be a big, big problem. The people of the United States have to nationalize the Fed. It was, as I say in two of my books, the biggest heist in history. Mm. And it's cost the American people trillions. How many trillions of dollars? I don't know. But here was a Congress a day or so before Christmas who allowed a half a dozen of the richest bankers in the world to take over the right to create their money and get nothing for it. Just hand over the sovereign right of the people to create their own money to a handful of bankers who, and this is the result of this, today 62 families own half of the wealth in the whole world.
Goodness gracious.
If you can imagine that and get your head around it, I can't.
Yeah. I wish I could just print my own money, don't you?
Well, that's what the banks do.
Yep.
I don't know if you know how the system works or not, but you said you should read Money Mafia, and I agree with you. Mm. And by the time you're finished, well, you'll know exactly how it works.
Very good. Looking forward to it. Let's see. Yeah, wasn't it Tesla? Did Tesla come up with the idea for the zero-point energy?
Yeah, absolutely. He was ahead of the crowd. And the FBI, I think it was, that stole all of the stuff when he died.
Yeah, yeah.
Because people have been designing these things for years, but the authorities so far, so-called authorities, have always gone in and taken their inventions and trashed them up and said to the people, don't build any more. Hmm. They've scared the wits out of them, and so nothing has happened, but it should have happened. And in keeping it from happening, not only are the people who hold the patents, you know, creating a terrible crime against the people of the world, but against the God who created it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't intended that we have this thing that's going on at the present time. But it's just greed. And it's greed that, in one of my books, I say, what's the word I'm looking for? Mammon rules the world. Well, mammon is just another word for money.
Mm-hmm.
And that the people that have the money are ruling the world, but that's because they've got a monopoly on it.
Mm-hmm.
And because politicians, bless their hearts, were too, I don't have to use my words gently here, but too...
Go ahead.
They didn't do what they should have done, which was to end the monopoly decades ago, maybe hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, I was reading something about... what's the name of that show, a TV show? Adam Ruins Everything. You ever see that?
Don't think so.
Okay. He kind of gets behind the scenes and tells a little history about things. The game Monopoly was invented by someone who wanted to show the evils of Monopoly.
Absolutely.
And... it turns out the way you play the game, you try to monopolize everything. So
you try to get it all in one corner, and that's what happens in the real world.
That's what happens in the real world. But initially, it was a woman that invented this game, Monopoly, and she was trying to show the evils of monopoly. And
the Wizard of Oz was, you know, pretended to know better than anybody else in the world what was going on, but he was just a guy shaking his boots.
That's right.
That's the way the system works.
Hiding behind a curtain. Pay no attention to that man behind a curtain.
You know, there's another good book I should mention on this subject. It's The Web of Debt, W-E-B, Web of Debt, by Ellen Hodgson Brown. And she's an American lawyer, lives in California. And the first 100 pages of that book are beautiful in the explanation of how the system works. So I would recommend that. And the other thing that she says is that after the robber barons or the bankers got control of the Fed, that they set up a committee to find the 25 most influential newspapers in the United States. And then to buy either control of the paper or control of their editorial content so that they could never print any of the kinds of criticisms that I'm talking about here tonight.
I think that's what they're trying to do right now, don't you?
I think they have a monopoly.
Yeah.
And there's a book by, what's his name, Daniel Estulin. E-S-T-U-L-I-N. He's the one who wrote the real story of the Bilderbergers. And he, in his next following book, that he traces the ownership or control of the entire English language news outlets, both print and electronic, and shows that they're all under the control of a Bilderberger, either owned by or controlled by a Bilderberger, which is right at the top of the apex of the cabal.
So, basically, we don't stand a chance, do we?
Well, that's not true.
No?
I'm a congenital optimist, so
convince
if enough
me.
People would get off their chest fields and do something, hope would be restored. And if they don't, we're going to have to change the name of the book.
To what?
Oh, the, no hope.
The end. The end. Yeah, I'm afraid it is. We laugh about it, but it pretty much will be the end.
It is just that serious.
It is just that serious. Yep. And people will look at the kind of winter we had. I don't know exactly what it was like in Canada. It was probably warmer than it was down here in Michigan. Of course, I'm down here in Michigan. And
Michigan's not very far away.
No, it's not, but at the same time, it got down below zero, 30 below zero with a wind chill factor. And the snow was melted. They couldn't have the Iditarod races up in Alaska because the snow had melted at the same time.
Right. Well, that's the crazy pattern that's developing. And what you had was a polar vortex.
Yeah.
And we had it in our place for a few days, too, and it was colder than you know what.
Yeah. And people say, well, it's so cold, that shoots down the global warming theory. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't. It just you have to go by the averages.
I know.
The average temperature of all of the things in the world that we keep track of, the temperature of the ocean, the temperature of the air, the temperature of the earth, they've been all going up every year for the last 25 years
right.
or so,
right.
and they're all going in the wrong direction, and we have to do something about it.
And it is the effect of global warming that takes that cold air up in the Arctic and Alaska and what have you, and shoves it down here to Canada and to the States. And that's just a direct result of global warming. That is global warming. And some people just can't wrap their heads around that because they don't want to.
That's right. They want to keep their heads in the sand.
Right, right.
Which is a dangerous thing to do.
Right. Yes, it is. But what can I say? Got
well, you can opinion. Say that read books.
Read books, yeah.
And I push books unashamedly, because when Alan Dulles was asked how he was able to smuggle so many Nazis into the United States, his answer was, because Americans don't read books. And it's true. How many people read books about monetary theory? How many people read books about ETs? How many people read books about these things that are really important?
Mm-hmm.
And if they did, they would do something. And I think, on a hopeful note, the young people are really cottoning on to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some remarkable things up here of young people saying, hey, get with it. And this 13-year-old Norwegian girl, have you read about her?
Mm-hmm.
The sarcastic girl that told the world leaders that they were not taking global warming seriously.
No.
And then she goes to London. They have thousands and thousands of people on the streets marching for you know, change in the response to global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And in Montreal, one of our two biggest cities, the same thing. So things are happening.
Yeah.
And it takes that kind of response, and especially from the young people.
Yeah.
Who've been affected by, you know, mass shootings and by global warming and by high costs of education, because there's not enough money going around when you have to borrow it all.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, you guys, you old guys like me, didn't get it right. And somebody's got to get it right.
And my granddaughter's boyfriend was just telling me today, and see, he didn't really buy into the UFO phenomenon, but in getting to know me, he started reading books and watching Ancient Aliens. And I was talking to him just today, and he was talking about, did you know this and did you know that? And I felt like saying, who do you think you're talking to, kid? You know? But yeah, I knew about that. And he's amazed. He said, maybe there is something to this. I said, yeah, you see, if you don't believe, I don't blame you for not believing, unless you have a personal experience. But if you read books, if you do your homework, you'll find out all of a sudden things will start to, you know, the light bulb will go on. So that is...
So read books, and all the books I've been talking about, including others, are available from your local bookstore or from Amazon.
Yeah.
My books, if anybody wants an autographed copy, they can get it from my website, which is paulhellierweb.com. That's Paul Hellier, all one word, web, paulhellierweb, all one word, .com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a copy at the normal price.
So they can find out anything they want by going to paulhellier.com, right?
Well, paulhellierweb.com.
Paul Hellier Web.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. Paul Hellier Web. Or just Google Paul Hellier. H-E-L-Y...
No two L's. H-E-L-L.
H-E-L-L-Y-E-R.
Y-E-R-L.
Okay.
Two L's.
All righty.
I've been told to go there several times. But I'm getting too old to worry about it.
I got the H-E-L-L on the end of my name, too. Twitchell. Mr. Paul Hellier, the Honorable Mr. Paul Hellier, once again, it has been an honor talking to you. And I hope we can do it again.
Okay, well, thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you.
Right on.
Yeah, and if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell, that's two L's at the end of Twitchell, no middle T, dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. And click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. It's ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to whfr.fm, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 12 noon, when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford College. Henry Ford College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down. 15, 14,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street.
Garden Street?
Loud music was coming from a car. Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds. I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly, he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we hugged goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.